Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. We'll end today's show with our Living the Dream series, in which we bring you the stories of local people working to make a year-round living in an economy driven by summer tourism. And this week, we'll also meet two people who are making a go of following their artistic dreams. One is a Polish immigrant who is fast becoming one of the most praised photographers in the region, and the other is an Eastern Shore author who has a penchant for ghosts. But we'll start in Rehoboth Beach, at a restaurant right on the avenue that's been a mainstay in the quaint Delaware resort for more than four decades. Since its opening way back in 1971, Nicola Pizza has been incredibly popular with both vacationers and locals. In the summer, crowds of people endure long waits for pizzas and the restaurant's signature calzones, known as Nicoboli's. But back when Nick Caggiano and his wife Joan launched this restaurant, its future was anything but certain. Nick says they started the place with almost no money and barely made it through the first winter. I swung by the restaurant earlier this week to talk with Nick about those early days, what he's learned about the restaurant business in the more than 40 years since, and of course, get my hands on one of those Nicoboli's.
Well, the first night we sold 77 pizzas. That was June 11th, 1971. We made not a lot of money that first year. I mean, it was a struggle. And I did substitute teaching at winter. And I was getting $30 a day substitute teaching. So I would be called sometimes 5 days a week. And that would be about $150. So $120, $150 I was making a week. But when I had those bills, because basically I bought the building, you know, that winter, bills were piling up, and basically we had a hard time that winter. And that next summer was kind of a struggle also. I mean, it got a little bit better, but we had a lot of competition that summer. But I came up with this idea of this sandwich, and I used to make it for myself. I used to put ground beef on a piece of dough, ketchup and cheese, and then roll it and bake it in the oven. And I had an employee that I fed all the time, and she did the same sandwich, but of course she wanted, instead of ketchup, she wanted our pizza sauce. And from that, she said to me one night, she said, "Listen, if I come in, would you sell me one?" And I said, "Sure, I'll sell you one." And, you know, I gave a price of 75 cents. And we didn't call it, you know, a Nicoboli at the time. We called it the thing, the twist, Stromboli. And then, of course, it really started to really sell. It started to take off, and I said, "Whoa!" I says, "I'm on to something." Yeah. And what I thought of, I said, "Look, I want to get this thing a patent on it." And I knew this patent attorney that was my customer, so I talked to him, and I said, "Listen, I want to get a patent on this sandwich I have." He says, "Nick, it's very difficult to get a patent for this, for the simple reason you got to have a tolerance of minus or plus five, and it's the best thing to do. Let's give it a name, like Kodak, Pepsi, and so forth. And once you give it a name and you have it registered, it's perpetual. It goes on forever. Where a patent does not go on forever." So anyway, one day his wife walked in, and his wife was named Penn, and she says, "Penn, tell him what you're going to call it." She says, NICOBOLI, Nicoboli. I said, "Wow, that's great. That's fantastic." So we got that registered. And from that, it just took off.
Wow. Your establishment has become, over the years, one of the mainstays, one of the to-go places, you know, here on Rehoboth Avenue. You, maybe more so than anybody else here in town, can see how this little quiet resort has changed in 40 years. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen?
What was told to me when I went into this business, if you don't have your money that you can live with all winter by Labor Day, you're not going to get it after Labor Day. In other words, the town just dried up. There was no one here. But things have changed. Washingtonites, people from New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and so forth, lawyers, doctors, whatever, they bought their second homes here. And they would come down on weekends, and basically they patronized my place. The outlets were tremendous change in this area. And Rehoboth Avenue, I mean, when I came here, a lot of the buildings and so forth, you know, are not there like they were at one time. And because of, it's a well-managed town, Rehoboth Beach, and basically the height limit is such, and basically they controlled it. They controlled, you know, the growth and so forth. So basically it's been for the better. It's a better town now. And you have a group of business people in Rehoboth Beach that do care about their business and the product they serve.
One of the most amazing things in you know, kind of learning about you and talking to people in the community is everybody, you know, speaks about your amazing work ethic. You know, in 40 years in the business, you know, some people might think about kind of slowing down a little bit. A few years ago, you opened up a second location just around the corner. You know, what's your plan for the future? I mean, it seems to me as we're sitting here, you are still very vibrant and energetic about your business.
I love it. You gotta love it. I give it a lot of dedication, you know, and it's my baby. This is what we started. And it would be very difficult for me to give it up. For me to walk away from this business today, I would have to get out of town because basically I would be a basket case. I couldn't do that. I'm going to stay here forever. I mean, it keeps me young. And being around these young kids, college kids and high school kids, you know, it kind of keeps you young.
Mm-hmm.
So it there's a lot of good things about it. And I work 7 days a week. My presence is here all the time. And I enjoy every bit of it. And I enjoy the customers. And don't forget, this is not just me. It's my wife also. My wife is excellent. Without that twosome, her and I, you know, this place would not exist.
That was Nick Caggiano, the owner of Nicola Pizza in Rehoboth Beach. And in case you're wondering, I highly recommend one of those Nicobolis. They absolutely live up to their reputation. And here's something else I find interesting about Nick Caggiano. In an age where advertising campaigns are so often done on TV or the internet, he says he does most of his the old-fashioned way, with a firm and sincere handshake and the humble request for his customers to go and tell a friend about Nicola Pizza. We turn now to a guy who used to work in the restaurant business here in Ocean City, but he took a leap of faith and followed his dream of becoming a photographer. Chris Paripa is a Polish immigrant who came to this country as a teenager and dreamed of somehow mixing together his two big passions, aviation and photography. And once he got his shot at the first ever Ocean City Air Show, that dream started to become a reality.
I was sitting in a room at the Ocean City Air Show, listening to the Raps Holland interview. And he started talking about, you know, that there is no aviation in his family. He was the first one, you know, his dad took him for the air show. And that was something what he wants to do, right? And then right behind the window, the guy, his name is Ed Hamill. He did a knife edge pass. And his narrator says, that's the Ed Hamill living the dream. And from that moment, that was like, you know, that's, I think, aviation photography. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. Because I was into aviation like all my life. I don't like cars, I hate cars, but I love airplanes.
Yeah.
And it's been that way always like that, yeah. You know.
Now you have an interesting story. You're from Poland originally, you came here as a teenager, and you've been here, you were working in the restaurant business, and you just basically said, I'm going to try this photography thing out, and within a few years, you're one of the most well-known photographers in this area. Tell me a little bit about how you made that jump from the restaurant business.
So I started working in a restaurant business a long time ago in Ocean City. I think I started as a dishwasher here. And aviation photography was like, you know, something would gave me wings, mm-hmm. you know, in photography. I started taking pictures as one of the very few people in the United States, you know, of the airplanes, photographing the air shows.
You know, the first time I met you, I was doing a piece on Rob Holland,
yeah.
and I was going up to fly with him, and you went up in another plane, and you were taking shots of me doing all the aerobatic tricks and whatnot. And I thought it was really notable that, you know, you weren't just into photography, but you were willing to go up in the air and face some fears and go up there and shoot 1,500 feet in the air. Do you think that that's what kind of set you apart from every other photographer, that courage to go, you know, where seemingly no other photographer was willing to go?
Yeah, definitely. You know, what you're talking about, it's air-to-air photography, right? That's kind of the highest level of aviation photography, you know? Everyone wants to shoot air-to-air pictures. And if you got a chance to, you know, to get pilots, really know, and the most important thing is they got to trust you.
Mm-hmm.
there is, you know, safety issues, things like that. If they don't trust you, you're not going to go flying and right. take pictures.
So how did you cultivate that relationship? You know, because you were still very green to being a photographer, and you essentially sold yourself and said, let me go up and let's see what we can do. How did that first conversation go?
Actually, you know, the people in aviation photography business keep telling that you got to prove yourself on the ground to go flying. So I was taking pictures from the ground like everybody else from other side of the fence. And then, you know, I show my pictures. My pictures were everywhere, right? You're posting on Facebook, posting on your website. And pilots knows you, you know? They see you take pictures.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I contact back then, you know, Rob Holland or other guys. And, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm a new photographer. I want to try, you know, maybe I can take some good pictures, things like that. And that's the other part of the aviation business, you know, of the aviation photography. Mm-hmm. We are one big family. Rob Holland says, yeah, let's do it. You know, he gave me a chance. So Rob Holland, Mike Gullion, you know, Ed Hamill, John Clatt, those are the guys, they let me live my dream, you know. I work very close with Geico Skytypers. And that was like a kind of the, you know, the breaker.
Yeah.
That was kind of a big deal for me because Steve Kapoor, he's a number 8, Geico Skytypers, he called me one day and he says, hey, I saw your pictures on Facebook, you know, do you want to go with us for the spring training to Florida for a week? And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, wow.
And that opened up a big thing for you because beyond Ocean City, your work was, like you said, being noticed and appreciated by pilots. And now you're going all over the country and shooting air shows all over the place. You know, tell me what that was like when you realized that you were leaving the neighborhood where you got your start. You know, did you feel like you had taken a huge leap, not just a baby step towards the occupation you were doing?
Yeah, it was amazing, you know. I met a lot of people. You know, when I started working with Geico Skytypers, I met amazing guy. His name is Mark McGinn. He's the myth, the legend of the videography, of the aviation videography. And he, you know, he introduced me to a lot of people. And that was really big thing. You know, I left Ocean City. I had a chance, you know, to travel all over United States and actually be a friend with people who used to be my idols, you know, like Rob Holland. I used to watch Rob Holland, Mike Gullion, you know, all those guys, Matt Chapman, you know.
It's interesting because now you're not just doing aviation photography. I mean, just before I met you here on the Ocean City Pier, you were shooting a couple that wanted to have some professional shots done. Tell me how the aviation photography has grown your hobby into now a really viable occupation.
The biggest thing about the photography for me, it's photojournalism. That's the highest level of photography, in my opinion. You know, not shooting models, not shooting beautiful girls or something, but photojournalism, you know, shooting the life as it is.
Yeah.
And then I got few really cool things, you know. I was shooting in Washington, D.C., the presidential inauguration. That was something big to me. I met a lot of really, really big photojournalists. And then I had, before the presidential inauguration, I went to the Newtown, Connecticut, right after the tragedy and the Sandy Hook.
What was it like to be in a place where the entire world was watching, not just Newtown, but also the presidential inauguration, and being there and capturing images and being one of literally thousands of other photojournalists?
It's an amazing feeling, you know, because sometimes, you know, when I got a chance to fly with really the best pilots in the world, or I got a chance to photograph the most powerful people in the world, I'm thinking to myself, me, guy born in Poland, you know, from little Ocean City right now, you know, and I'm here. I see the history. I got a chance to witness the history, you know. Mm-hmm. That's amazing feeling. That's what I'm saying. That's what is, you know, the living the dream.
That was Chris Paripa, one of the most sought-after photographers and photojournalists here on the coast. To see more of his work, including his new photo series, The People of Ocean City, click to our website, wamucoast.org. We end today's show by talking about a topic that some people may find to be a bit scary on the Ocean City Boardwalk. And no, we're not talking about nasty t-shirts or gangs or sagging pants. We're actually talking about ghosts. My next guest is kind of like the Eastern Shore's resident expert on the supernatural. Mindy Burgoyne is the author of Haunted Eastern Shore, Ghostly Tales from East of the Chesapeake. And she will be leading the first ever ghost walking tour of Ocean City today and tomorrow through the historic downtown area. They'll be meeting at the Ocean City Lifesaving Museum. Mindy Burgoyne joins me on the phone now. Mindy, welcome to Coastal Connection.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So, Mindy, you do these walking tours all over the Eastern Shore. I think this is the eighth in the Chesapeake Ghost Walk series. So I guess the simple question is, what took so long to include Ocean City? And, I mean, are there just fewer ghosts here at the beach?
No, Ocean City was very difficult. It certainly was the hardest one for me to do. But I really wanted to do it because I think it's worth it's investigating. It's a tourist town, so people are interested in ghost walks. But because Ocean City is not very old, you know, it just really was established in 1875, so, and then kind of reinvented in 1910, 1920. All these other towns, you know, Snow Hill, Easton, Cambridge, Denton, Chrisfield, they've been around 300 years. Mm. So that combined with two other things, and that's the overlay of contemporary on top of historical, like you have in Ocean City. And then finally, it's not, Ocean City's always been a tourist town rather than a hometown. I mean, it's hometown to some, but typically when you're going in and you're looking for, you know, ghosts or paranormal experience, you're looking to people that live there that were associated with the town. So it's a lot more digging. You know, I had to dig and dig and dig. It certainly took me longer to research this than any other tour, but it was certainly the most fun.
When you start digging into this, do you lean more towards folklore, you know, kind of the legend of the particular town that you're talking about? Or do you dive right into, you know, historical research data, you know, things that you would find, for instance, here, you know, at like the NAB Research Center, for instance?
You have to dive into both. You dive into folklore, you dive into history. A lot of people that do ghost tours don't get into the history because it's hard. It's mm-hmm. very difficult to do. But in my ghost walks, the towns always become a character. So the setting where all these spirits exist has to be something that is familiar to the people. It's like reading a book and knowing where the book takes place. So I put a lot of effort into the history, but that's the easy part. And then I looked through folklore collections. The NAB Research Center had four things in it about Ocean City. So that's the fewest of any town that I looked at. But there was also interviews. I've already completed 26, 27, I have to count them up, maybe up to 30 now, face-to-face interviews with people just trying to find out if there are paranormal happenings or unexplained events or and I found them, but I found in Ocean City, I did that mostly through one-on-one interviews. And one out of every five gives me something good.
Well, tell me about some of the sites that, you know, people who are going to be taking this tour this weekend with you are going to be, you know, going through and learning that there was some sort of paranormal activity at these historic and iconic Ocean City landmarks.
The two on the opposite farthest ends of each other are probably the most interesting, and each of them have three what I would call viable paranormal events or ghosts. And one is the Ocean City Lifesaving Station Museum, and the other is the Shoreham Hotel. So they're the inlet to 4th Street, so that's about 0.8 miles. Each one of them has three ghosts, and they're very interesting stories. And lots of unrelated sources that will concur that these things happened. The thrill is when you've got the history, all the data history on one side, and then the folklore, and suddenly they connect. So there's the Trimper's Carousel, the Lodge, Terry Weil, and then, of course, we have the Henry Hotel, which is most people don't know about. That's going to be a great stop.
We've been speaking with Mindy Burgoyne. She's an author, and she's also going to be the leader of the first ever Ocean City Ghost Walk. It's happening Friday night and Saturday night. Mindy, thank you so much for joining me, and best of luck.
Thanks, Brian.
You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm Brian Russo.